It's Sunday morning, March 4th, and you are listening to In the Wheelhouse. ITW is a weekly baseball podcast covering the Chicago Cubs and anything else we feel like talking about. I'm Leo Fontana.
And I'm Tom Hockney. This week on ITW, we will explore the grievance filed by MLBPA against four major league teams. We'll talk about the impact of changes on the Cubs coaching staff. And for the first time in 2018, we will give some time to Chicago's other baseball team, the Chicago White Sox.
So, Tom, before we begin, I wanted to ask you, are you having an Oscars party, and why wasn't I invited?
You know, we used to, actually. In the aughts, we did. And by the way, the aughts, arguably one of the worst decades for best pictures of all time, including the all-time worst best picture, Crash. No, you know, as we're getting older, it's a school night, and for a variety of reasons, we are actually not having a party. But we did go out and do our best to see all of the Best Picture nominees, and we still have two left to see today. And it's my understanding you actually saw one of those.
I did. We have kids. It's hard for us to get out to see movies. But last night we did see we saw Darkest Hour with Gary Oldman. And I've also seen Dunkirk. Dunkirk's one of them too, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Well, I want to kind of give a brief review of Darkest Hour.
Awesome.
And I think it was a good movie. I would hesitate to call it a great movie. It's a little, I don't know, it's a little manipulative in the way that it plays upon the sympathies of the audience, but Gary Oldman is unbelievable. I mean, if you know what Gary Oldman looks like and you know what Winston Churchill looks like, you know that there's no resemblance whatsoever, but yet he brings him to life. He is Winston Churchill in every single way. It's a tremendous performance, and you'll really admire that. But well, for my money, I think Dunkirk was a better movie. So
that's interesting, because you're absolutely right about that great actor. I mean, I remember the first time I saw JFK and Lee Harvey Oswald came on, and I was like, I thought that was Lee Harvey Oswald. That's how great of a job he did. And basically on what I'm reading, and again, that's one of the films I haven't seen, but we'll see it this morning. It looks like he's a slam dunk for best actor. But just briefly, the best picture nominees this year, who I think will win is everything that I'm reading. It's going to be this Three Billboards film, which we saw on Friday night, which I was very disappointed in. You know, basically, if there's anything worse than racist, that would be politically correct racist. and kind of like we discussed previously about your dad, it just seemed like it's a Hollywood whitewash of a typical Trump voting town. But the movie that I want to win was the movie we saw last night, and it was absolutely mesmerizing, and it was called The Shape of Water.
Really?
Oh, my God. It's just, I haven't seen a movie like that since Amelie, which really took me in the early 2000s. I thought that was a phenomenal film. I don't think it was even nominated, that movie. But this movie, I don't think it's going to win. I hope it does. But I think Three Billboards are going to win. But enough about that. It's time to talk about baseball.
Yeah, let's talk about baseball. And the Major League Baseball Players Association has filed a grievance against four teams, the A's, the Marlins, the Pirates, and the Rays, for not spending money earned from revenue sharing. And I wanted to ask you, do you think they have a case?
No, I don't. Everything that I've read, and this morning I actually read a long article on the whole subject. The Players Association is going to lose this. I think it's maybe they're just bringing this up to draw attention to it, but there's two things going on here. You have the fact that the some of these teams are what I would call markets that I'm not even sure that will be around in 50 years, such as the Pirates. If the Pirates
don't draw anyone. They don't draw anyone.
They don't draw anyone, but they didn't sign a single free agent this year. Seriously?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, if I'm a fan of the Pirates, what are you in the world that we live in? It's just a really bad message.
They trade McCutcheon. They trade Cole. They don't sign anyone. There's so many players out there who could make them competitive. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. And I think that, like I said, it's a really bad message for the fans in the baseball world that we live in. They're given money to spend. Now, in the Pirates' defense, they will say that they spent a lot of money on their infrastructure, their minor league system, and Major League Baseball is saying that this is a meritless case because there's been no violations. And if there were violations, MLB would police it, meaning that they would notify the teams to say, hey, you got this money, what are you doing with it? And I believe that there's transparency anyways as far as how that money is spent in any other way. But if you look at the teams, it's kind of interesting. You have the Marlins and you have the Rays, two Florida teams who I don't think are in jeopardy of losing their franchise. And by the way, Miami is notorious for doing this.
They have a new ownership group, you know, and they unloaded those massive contract for Giancarlo Stanton and allowed him to be traded to the Yankees. But then they also dealt Ozuna. They dealt Yelich. They'll probably deal that catcher of theirs, Real Muto. You know, what they did, I think, in terms of if you're a Marlins fan, and that group of people is shrinking ever so quickly, that it's going to be hard to really continue to root for that team. I also want to mention, too, that the A's payroll, do you know what the A's payroll is? It's only $58 million. I mean, that's just crazy.
That's two Jake Arrietas.
Yeah, that is. Well, you know what? What's funny is that I don't think the A's can continue to exist in that market. They really can't. And the A's are a team that has been in Philadelphia. They've been in Kansas City. So what if they move from Oakland? It is not the end of the world. Move them to Portland. Move them to a venue or a market where someone will actually show up other than my brother-in-law. Okay? Right. It's too much. I also think, and I want to say one last thing, this grievance, while I agree with you, it has no merit. It's not that it has no merit. I don't think they're going to win it. I agree with you there. But it does set the foundation for the next negotiated collective bargaining agreement. So I think that the players are negotiating for what I think will be a salary floor, that teams will have to spend a certain amount of money on their major league rosters. So,
well, you know, I just don't see how this plays out in 10 or 15 years in MLB when attendance is down so low. I mean, everything that they're doing is betting on the come on television. And for as long as baseball stays popular, or at least as popular as it is today, there's not an issue. But I just wonder in about 10 or 15 years, when what are they going to do to put butts in the seats in these stadiums to keep the evolution of baseball continuing onward and upward. So,
all right, well, let's move on. That's plenty about that. That's kind of a dull subject. Let's get into something that I think you and I both have been wanting to talk about, and that's the Chicago Cubs. Those are both of our favorite teams. And they've made some major, while they didn't make a lot of changes to their everyday lineup, they did make some changes to the pitching staff, and we talked about that last week. But this week, I want to talk about the changes they made to their coaching staff. Specifically, Chris Bosio has been replaced by Jim Hickey. Bosio goes to the Detroit Tigers. Mm-hmm. Hickey is a Chicago guy. He was with Madden in Tampa Bay. They're close friends. He has kind of a different approach. You know, I would probably liken it to the fact that, Bosio is a bit of a dry martini. You know,
right.
Jim Hickey seems to be a little more like a glass of champagne. You know what I mean? And I think that we'll see, you know, I like what I've heard about Hickey. I don't know how this will translate in terms of wins and losses, but I think it's a good move.
Well, it's very unusual that a team that is doing as well as the Cubs are doing, they're fresh off of winning their first World Series in over 100 years just a few months ago, to replace both the pitching and the hitting coach. And in this case of Hickey, I believe that Madden wanted him from the outset, but he couldn't. He couldn't get him. I don't think Bosio would ever come to Chicago if Madden could have came over with Hickey when he took the Cubs job.
Well, I think he was kind of stuck with Bosio. I mean, they had made a commitment to Bosio. Bosio was integrated into their system. It was kind of like, well, we're going to bring you over. You know, it was such a stroke of luck that allowed them to get Madden in the first place. You know what I mean? They had to rush to just get him in, and they just felt like, well, we'll just go with who we have. Well, now Madden finally got to bring in his guy.
Right.
You know, and that's what I think Hickey represents. And I think that I don't know if it means the Cubs pitchers will be any better, but I will say that, Madden, I think, will be a lot happier. and the weekly interviews with the pitching coach on the radio and before the game, I think will be a lot more fun. So there's that to look forward to.
You know, on the hitting side, this was a different transaction.
Yes.
I believe that John Malley, who now moves on to Philadelphia, our former hitting coach, didn't get the job done.
How do you lead, or you're second in the league in runs scored? How are you not getting the job done? I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, but... no, totally get it. I got two words for you, Kyle Schwarber. I think that certain hitters and also Hayward is still ultimately you have to kind of blame the hitting coach for the totality of the team. And if you kind of break down last year, even though that they won 90 games, again, they were the defending world champions, the expectation was more. And I don't necessarily think that it was the starting pitching. I think we had problems with our relief pitchers big time, but the starting pitching was as good as it could be as that what I thought. But I thought the hitters, there was just situational hitting that was wrong. We didn't play really good, what I would call whitey ball in certain circumstances.
They didn't make contact. You're right about that.
Correct. So
in terms of situations, they struck out way too many times when they needed to just make contact. You know, the only one who seems to be able to do that is Rizzo. And I think you're right. I think you are right, you know, ultimately, that Malley didn't get the job done, or at least they felt that they needed a fresh set of eyes to sort of look at the problem. And what's interesting about Davis, and this is what I didn't know, you know, I know that he was a tremendous left-handed hitter. Yep. You know, they brought him in, I thought, initially to really help Hayward, but it's really, I think, to fix Kyle Schwarber, because, you know, Davis came up as a catcher with San Francisco, with the Giants. And he had a tremendous first year. Then he struggled in his second year, was sent to AAA the same way that Schwarber was. The parallels are astonishing. And I think that, you know, I hope that you're going to see Schwarber really take a step forward. And certainly I hope that Hayward will too. And if those two guys produce, look out. This team is unstoppable.
Agreed. And I think Davis is a hitter's coach, meaning that the players really like him. And I think baseball hitter, and it even goes back to Don Baylor's time, I think they respect guys that have done it at the major league level better than guys that don't. And it's been my experience that the best hitting coaches sometimes are ex decent hitters at the major league level.
All right. I just want to, one real quick thing. Madden announced what the Cubs rotation will be. And it goes like this: Lester, Hendricks, Darvish, Quintana, and then Chatwood. I mean, do you agree with that order? You feel okay about that?
Well, again, I think Lester has to be number one.
Yeah.
Hendricks and Darvish will fight it out for the two hole. I hope Hendricks can hold up. Darvish is definitely a number two. And if he ends up being number three, we're going to be in a really good position, let me tell you.
No.
To me, the guy that nobody talks about, and I'm going to talk about him now, is Quintana. I think if Quintana wins 15 games, the Cubs will be knocking on the World Series door again. And so Chatwood, to me, is just gravy. If Chatwood just does 12-12, that's, or 10-10 even, we're in a really good spot there. It's a very decent rotation.
Yeah, Chatwood pitched well yesterday.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
All right. So, you know, we're located here in Chicago and we give a lot of time to the Chicago Cubs, but you know, you people out there may not be aware, but there is another team here and that's the Chicago White Sox. And I think it's important.
Now, is it a major league team?
It is a major league team is what I'm told. They are in the American League, you know, so that's a different league, but at the same time, they are part of the whole major league structure. So I think it's important that we recognize some of the things that they're doing, because I think maybe not this year, but in a couple of years, maybe as soon as next year, you're going to see this team take a real step forward. And, you know, they're just flying under the radar. And despite some setbacks in terms of some injuries, you know, I think they're really on the right track, you know.
Yeah, you know, I love your optimism on the White Sox. You know from past experiences, but I'll share with our listeners today, they're not my favorite team in the world. But I must acknowledge that a lot of the moves that they've made over the last two or three years have been astounding moves. But that being said, I think that they could be the second or third worst team in baseball this year, or the worst team. And the reason is, it's nothing to do with the guys on the field who are getting better every year, that meaning the offensive side. It's the pitchers.
Yeah.
They just don't have a rotation that can compete at the major league level this year. Now, if they got hot like they did 2 years ago in April and May, and maybe they fortified that staff, they may not lose 95 games like I project that they will this year. But that being said, I agree with you 100%. In two or three years, they're definitely going to be a team to be reckoned with, but they need to spend money.
To spend money, and they'll need to spend it on pitching to sort of fortify some of the young pitchers they have, like Giolito fellow who can throw 100 miles an hour.
There's no doubt. That guy is an absolute stud. And they've got, you know, they've got a budding star in their second baseman, Moncada.
Moncada.
The problem is, the number one pitcher on their teams is James Penny Shields, and he is terrible. He's terrible.
He has been terrible. And no one can figure out why. And I've heard through some of my sources that he has improved a great deal this spring. We'll see, you know, but I mean, you're looking at that staff and their ace is Miguel Gonzalez, and you're right. They just don't have the pitching to compete. They will be bad. But I'll tell you, the other day I'm driving home and I'm listening to the White Sox on WGN, no less, who picked them up.
Right.
And
I know.
And I'm listening to them play the Cubs and Luis Robert, their big signing, international signing out of Cuba, he drew a walk. And I'll tell you, it was the most exciting moment of the day. You know, it was really unbelievable. I just was enthralled. So I think we're going to see some good things. I think Luis Robert is going to be unbelievable. I think this Eloy Jimenez, who they traded Quintana to the Cubs for, is going to be really good. And, you know, Moncada, we said, will also be really good. I think there's really, really rosy days ahead for the White Sox. So
yeah, I don't disagree. And I have to tell you, if I owned the Sox, I'd make a strong play for Arrieta. And the reason is because they have the money to spend on a pitcher like that. And I really do believe, I agree with you, in two or three years, they could contend and he would be a really great anchor for that pitching staff right now. I don't think he's a long-term solution because, quite frankly, I think he's a rather old 32-year-old or whatever his age is by major league standards. But, you know, when you look at the team, it's just – I'm looking at their depth charts now, and, you know, there's a lot of guys I don't understand. I don't even recognize their names, but I agree that that Giolito – but I think Carson Fulmer is one of their pitchers that – you got to watch out for that guy. But the whips on the other pitchers, meaning Hector Santiago and Shields and Gonzalez, are not so good.
No, they're not good. But, you know, hopefully they'll have a couple of relievers who have good years. Maybe they can flip them towards the end of the year, you know, flip them by the trade deadline and sort of, you know, add some more depth to an already, which is, I mean, profound roster. But see what happens. All right. So Texas Wesleyan, their baseball coach, Mike Jeffcoat, a former major league pitcher with the Texas Rangers, he was fired because he refused to consider a high school player from the state of Colorado. And the reason why is that, you know, now Texas Wesleyan is not a Division I school.
Nope.
But this kid writes an email to the coach requesting maybe, you know, inquiring about the program and could he try out for the team. And Jeffcoat writes him back saying that they're not considering players from Colorado because of the marijuana law, and that players from Colorado would have difficulty passing their drug test. And then he goes on to write, "Thank your liberal politicians for that policy." And he was summarily dismissed the next day. And I just thought this was just unbelievable.
You know, I have to say, as heinous as that note was, I don't know whether he should have been fired for that, quite frankly. I think that's a little rough, but in the big picture, I mean, that's a typical Mike Jeffcoat, who I remember very well as a pitcher. He won 26 games and he lost 27 in his career. and he acts like a 500 guy, you know. So, but I think yeah. that, you know, in the politically charged world that we live in, you're going to see more and more of this. It's almost, you know, we've talked about this at length previously. It's almost like we're living in the times of a psychological civil war in the United States. And I think, you know, let's put it this way. Mike Jeffcoat has a lot of time to think about what he just did, because I think he'll struggle to get anything besides even a Division III job moving
yeah,
forward.
Yeah, he'll be coaching at a high school, probably
Correct.
In Colorado
Correct.
Somewhere, you know. I mean, but you're right. I mean, you can't politicize a sport. I mean, you know, that's dangerous ground, I guess, because many players do the same, many players use their status as athletes to put forth political positions. But at the same time, I just think this is just bananas.
There's a reason why organizations have their legal department look at letters and email stuff. And obviously this missive was not blessed by either anybody within the organizations. Jeffcoat just sent it out.
Yeah.
And now he's going to pay the consequences. And, you know, words have, there's repercussions to your words. And this is a perfect case to that. And the other thing, too, is let's not forget, marijuana is legal in Colorado. You can say whatever you want, but it's legal, just like alcohol is legal in Texas. And so, you know, Texas, that's the home of the drive-through liquor store, you know, for the drunk driver on the go.
All right. So let's move on to some minor stuff. Russell Westbrook, the quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks, is hanging around the Yankees camp.
No, you mean Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson, sorry, Russell yeah. Westbrook. Yeah, right. Sorry, Russell Wilson has been hanging around the Yankees camp. He played baseball where he went to college, and he had 4 home runs in batting practice, and he says he wants to play in a Grapefruit League game. He may have already done it. What do you think?
Well, I've always been a fan of Russell Wilson. I love his spirit. I always liked players that, tempted to play two sports. So, you know, one of my great memories of two sport players was, as I recall, Deion Sanders, when he played, I think, for the Atlanta Falcons, ran back a touchdown early afternoon Sunday game, and then played in the Major League Baseball and almost hit a home run in that night game.
For the Atlanta Braves, yeah.
And so, I'm rooting for him, but I would also think that if I owned the Seattle Seahawks, I would be a little bit upset with this, to be honest with you. Because you are the quarterback and you kind of are the franchise guy. You take a shot to the head, you know, there is risk in playing Major League Baseball. I would be a little skittish about it, but I love his spirit, you know.
Yeah, me too. I like it too, and – you know, baseball's not quite as rough a sport as football is, but at the same time, if I were the owner of the Seahawks, I'd be a little upset. So I can understand both positions. Let's hope he stays healthy. All right, so Jake Arrieta is still unsigned, and I look around, and you mentioned that the White Sox actually could make use of him, but I'm thinking that the Brewers are the one team that I think could really put him to the best use. And I think they could sign him. They could sign Lance Lynn. And that would really put them in. I don't think that makes them better than the Cubs, but I think it puts them in a position to challenge them.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when you look at FanGraphs projections for the National League Central, they actually have the Brewers taking a big step back. You know, the Brewers won 86 games last year. They haven't projected to win 78 this year. So obviously adding an arm like Arrieta or even Lynn.
Or Cobb. Or Alex Cobb.
Right, no doubt about it. But I think we can't lose sight of the fact that the team that I think is really hot for him right now, which is inexplicable, is Washington. Washington's got scouts looking at him. And all I can tell you is if they got Arrieta, you know, you might as well mail the World Series to them.
But I don't know. I don't see how they can do it because they don't have the room under the salary cap. They have to stay under that cap. And they're paying a zillion dollars to Scherzer and Strasburg.
No
I
doubt.
I don't see how they can do it. I think Philadelphia will be the team that signs him, although I think that the Brewers are the team that should sign him. But I think it'll be the Phillies. And I wouldn't be upset if the Phillies signed him. I think it would be good. All right, so this is what I kind of wanted to wrap up with this, and I think you did too. The Boston Red Sox have filed a petition with the city of Boston to change the name of Yawkey Way, who was the former owner of the Boston Red Sox.
Right.
And they want to do this because Yawkey was a famous, would we go so far as to accuse him of being a famous racist, that he was the last owner to allow his team to be integrated. Jackie Robinson breaks in 1947. The Red Sox don't bring in Pumpsy Green until 1959. Okay, so, I mean, what do you think? Do you think they're right to do this?
Well, it's a long time coming. It's not just for the racism thing, as I'll tell you here in a second. So Tom Yawkey, he was born in 1902 in Detroit. His grandfather was going to buy the Detroit Tigers. He was a, you know, Yawkey inherited a fair amount of money, and he didn't really make it on his own. But his grandfather was like a magnate in Detroit, and his grandfather was to buy the Tigers in the early 1900s, and died during the week that the papers were being signed.
Wow.
And so he never did become the owner of the Tigers, which, by the way, would have changed Tom Yawkey's life. Yawkey would have ended up being, you know, an heir to the Tigers, as opposed to, you know, being
an heir to the Red Sox or
correct.
Whatever, or acquiring the Red Sox.
Correct. So the interesting thing is like you said, from 1950 to 1966, they never finished less than 10 games out of first place. Never. Not 1 year. But yet, like you said, they were one of the very last teams to integrate. And they did it kicking and screaming. I'm not convinced, based on things that I've read about Yawkey in the past, that they would have ever done it if they didn't really kind of have to do it. So that's a blemish right there. But there's another blemish on Yawkey that people don't talk about, and that is basically and also, by the way, Jackie Robinson said that Tom Yawkey was the most bigoted man he had ever come across in his life.
And this is a man right. who came across every bigot in America probably let Jackie Robinson know how he felt. Wow.
Right.
That's amazing.
Right. Yep. And so Yawkey, who died in the late 70s, there's another blemish on this guy, too. And that is from 1971 to 1991, one of their Florida guys that worked in their spring training camps, Donald Fitzpatrick, abused multiple boys. Multiple. And the fact of the matter is, in the 70s, when Tom Yawkey was alive, he knew and protected it, because there was rumblings about this Fitzpatrick character, who later pled guilty to felonies on this. And both Tom and his wife Jean, who ended up taking over the Red Sox, basically, like the Catholic Church, protected this guy.
Wow.
So, you know, when you look at the Red Sox, and we talked about it at length last year, because they again had racial problems at the beginning of last season with I believe it was a Baltimore player.
Yeah, it was Adam Jones, I think, the center fielder. And every black player will tell you
that to play to be
a visiting team in Boston is to really. The fans just really let you have it with all sorts of racial stuff, you know.
I've had the fortune, because I've told you many times before, I've been to a lot of major league parks back in my old traveling days, and I had the fortune of going to Fenway Park twice and sitting in phenomenal seats. But every time I was in social situations, these are some of the most racist people I've ever come across in my life. And unfortunately, I've come across a lot of them. You know, there's towns in this country that are so racist it scares me, like St. Louis is one of them. But Boston takes the cake.
Yeah, I mean,
these white Irish guys, it's mind-boggling to me the way that they see the world and the way that they've treated some of baseball's greatest players. By the way, you can say whatever you want, but adding the African American players shamefully, it took forever, but it's been one of the greatest things that baseball's ever done, if you ask me, because of their contributions to the game.
Yeah.
So I absolutely take that sign down. The question I have is, what took you so long?
You know what Bill Burr, the comedian, says about Boston? Which is where he's from Boston.
Right,
he says,
I know.
He says it's like San Francisco, only with racists. You know, it's small. Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of good restaurants.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right, right.
A lot of liberals, but there's also correct. Racists.
Yeah. You know? The best thing I could say about Boston is you can get a really good fish dinner there.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. So we're going to wrap it up. If any of you out there have questions or comments, please send them to the email address youareinthewheelhouse@gmail.com. We'd very much like to know what you're thinking.